Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a certified financial planner reveals the most common money anxieties he hears from clients, and it doesn't matter how much or how little wealth they have. Also this morning, rising food and transportation costs are challenging for everyone, but they are creating significant operational hurdles for long-running and critical Meals on Wheels programs for seniors, programs which now find themselves at a crossroads. And there's more summertime fun in the month of August from the Hancock Park District. Michelle Rumschlag will tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, July 28th, 2026. What, we're about 9 weeks away from football season now? I mean, since we're in the back-to-school mode now, I guess, or full-on, full steam ahead into autumn at this point, just about 9 weeks until football season starts, or thereabouts. I don't know. I haven't done the math, but this I thought was interesting on the topic of football season. USA Today is ranking the football stadiums in the Big Ten when it comes to home field advantage, and Ohio Stadium is at the top of the list, home of the Buckeyes, at the top of the list in the Big Ten. Number two is Autzen, is that how you pronounce it? Autzen Stadium in Oregon, followed by Beaver Stadium, the home of Penn State, and Michigan Stadium comes in at number four, the Big House. What makes this interesting is that in a separate piece, USA Today is also ranking the best college football stadiums regardless of conference. I mean, those are the ones just specifically in the Big Ten, but then they have another list of the best stadiums for home field advantage across all of college football. And Tiger Stadium, LSU, tops that list with a horseshoe coming in second. But Beaver Stadium, Penn State, is third on that list. Kyle Field, that's Texas A&M, is fourth, and Autzen Stadium, Oregon, is ranked fifth. So they have Oregon ahead of Penn State in the Big Ten, but behind Penn State overall. on these two same publication. It's not like it's two different publications who have got two different rankings. Same publication, and they have that. So I'm a little confused on that. Anyway, I just thought that was really interesting. I saw the Big Ten list and Ohio State being number one, and so that got me to thinking, gee, I wonder if they're number one overall across all conferences. So I looked that up and found the other list, and it just doesn't make any sense. Not that it matters. Ohio State doesn't go to Penn State or Oregon this year, so I guess it's not a big deal one way or the other, but it's just weird that they would be ranked differently on those two separate lists, both from USA Today. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started now. We survived Monday. Have you heard about this? This is, I guess, a fashion trend that is popular with Generation Z, with Gen Zers, is drawing sharp reaction from parents. It is a trend in denim. They call it fold-over jeans. Fold-over jeans. Have you heard about this? Apparently, these are jeans that are deliberately designed with an undone open fly appearance. So, if you see a young person and you think your fly's open, maybe there's a good chance that it's meant to be that way. These are apparently flying off shelves at retailers, including, I mean, the trendy ones, Hollister and Nordstrom, and the Cosmopolitan style editor Ayanna Ishmael says that Gen Z has embraced this trend, calling it funny, cheeky, and a way to show off a little more skin. Although I'm not sure that that's the skin that you really want to show off. Parents, not surprisingly, are not as enthusiastic for this trend. One mom in New York City for this piece that I saw on the Newswire, Lisa Alvarez said, every time my kids come downstairs, I want to go zip your pants. But despite the backlash, many parents acknowledge that every generation has its own fashion rebellion. So the kids want to walk around with their fly undone. There's not a whole lot we can do about it. We used to point and laugh at someone if they walked around with their fly undone. To this day, I am self-conscious about this sort of thing. I'm constantly checking. Do I have my fly up? Apparently, it's not a thing for today's young people. That's crazy. I wonder if school dress codes, we're talking back to school, I wonder if school dress codes cover this. School administrators might want to take a second look at this. You might be wondering if a return to $4 a gallon gas has reignited interest in alternative fuel vehicles, which in recent months and years has seen a decline in popularity as gas prices dropped and tax credits were eliminated. So now we're back up around $4 a gallon. Are people getting interested in EVs again? Well, you would be correct in that assumption. A YouGov survey finds rising gasoline prices did indeed boost interest in electric vehicles among American car buyers. But only temporarily, among adults who are planning to buy a vehicle within 12 months, EV interest nearly doubled from 8% in February, when gas averaged $2.91 a gallon, to 15% in April, before dropping back to 11% in May. That was when gas topped out at $4.48 a gallon. That was the highest national average in May. So, kind of interesting that there was a spike in interest that waned even as pump prices continued to go up. And most analysts take that to mean that fuel costs alone are insufficient to sustain demand for electric vehicles. But it did cause a spike in interest. At least those car buyers were looking at it, probably when they saw the price of the EVs without the tax credits became a lot less attractive. I can buy a lot of $4 a gallon gas for the increase in cost of an electric vehicle. And of course, you're still going to pay to quote unquote fuel up your vehicle because the electricity to charge them ain't free. So, and that's going up too, but kind of interesting. Let's see, a couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Boy, you talk about issues with healthcare in this country. It's the topic that just won't go away. Healthcare continues to be an issue, but sometimes it's not the care so much as quite often, as a matter of fact, it's not the quality of care. The actual healthcare itself that is the issue that we struggle with. It's the complex system of paying for it, insurance and all of that. A woman in Colorado says that her lengthy name has caused her insurance claims to be repeatedly denied. Her name is Carrie Ann Weinberger Morneau. Carrie Ann Weinberger Morneau. It's a hyphenated name. She got married 34 years ago. She's always used that hyphenated surname, Weinberger Morneau. But when she switched to a Cigna Medicare Advantage program last year, suddenly denial letters began arriving for routine services. She'd go in for, a regular screening, mammogram, whatever it might happen to be, and they would deny coverage. The problem, she eventually learned after many phone calls and big rigmarole trying to figure this out, the problem she found out was Medicare's character limit. In the Medicare system, they shorten her name because it's too many characters. They have a limit. Providers, on the other hand, submit the bills using her full name. And because those two things didn't match, even though she had the same address, same birth date, same social security number, and same first 17 letters of her last name or whatever. But because it wasn't an exact match, the insurers flagged the discrepancies and rejected the claims. Wow. Cigna confirmed that they are actively working to resolve her case, but I wonder if she's just going to have to change her name and go with one last name or the other and not hyphenate it, or at least for her Medicare coverage. It's crazy. 34 years she's had no problem, and now suddenly it's become a problem. Is there? And I think we have a problem. I think it's not her problem. I think it's the healthcare system's problem. That's crazy. That's crazy. And here is something to chew on if you are just waking up this morning, getting ready to start your day, and not really wanting to go to work. You know, we all have those days, right? You get up and you say, boy, I'm not motivated today. Well, this is why you got to do it anyway. Fidelity Investments is estimating a $185,000 price tag on healthcare and medical expenses for new retirees. To talk about healthcare, according to Fidelity, a 65-year-old retiring this year can expect to spend $185,000 throughout their golden years on healthcare. That is more than double what they estimated back in 2002, the first time they put out this retiree medical care estimate. They first did it in 2002, and it was half of what it is 24 years later. Fidelity's projection assumes that retirees are enrolled in Medicare Parts A, B, and D, and includes premiums, co-payments, and other out-of-pocket expenses for medical care and prescription drugs throughout their retirement. The latest estimate comes during a major demographic transition, it says here, with roughly 4 million Americans turning 65 each year through, 2027. So through next year, the 4 million Americans turning 65 and retiring. So this is why you have to get up and go to work, because gotta pay those medical bills. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Gradually becoming sunny today with a high in the 80s, partly cloudy tonight, low in the 60s. The Findlay Police Department says two people were arrested on drug charges during a traffic stop on Interstate 75. The police department says officers specially trained in highway drug interdiction observed a vehicle on I-75 displaying criminal indicators of drug trafficking and conducted a traffic stop. The police department says during the traffic stop, 22 pounds of marijuana was located in the vehicle, which was traveling from Michigan to Kentucky. The police department says the two occupants of the vehicle, both from Kentucky, were arrested on felony charges for possession of drugs and drug trafficking. Get more on our website. Protected immigrant status for thousands of people in Southwest Ohio has expired.
For thousands of Haitian families in Springfield, a federal program that has allowed them to work, live, and build their lives in the U.S. comes to an end. Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, expires for Haitians and Syrians across the country. Around 15,000 Haitians lived in Springfield alone, and many now face questions about their jobs, their homes, and what comes next.
ONN's Dave Chudowski reporting. The Ohio Department of Transportation is advising drivers of a road closure for resurfacing. This is in Putnam County on State Route 694. Get more details on the road closure in this story on our website. Christian Clearinghouse is thanking everyone who helped out with their Stuff the Bus school supplies drive last week. On their social media, Christian Clearinghouse is highlighting three young ladies who, by running a lemonade stand, raised $800 to buy school supplies for kids in the community. And then to top it off, the girls dropped off fully packed backpacks right at the Stuff the Bus event. Christian Clearinghouse says they're blown away by the girls' kindness, hard work, and big hearts. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
You know, few things can make us more anxious than questions about our finances, especially as we try to anticipate our financial future. And this is especially true in times of overall financial uncertainty. Bankrate financial analyst Stephen Cates is a certified financial planner who recently broke down some of the most common questions that he has heard from clients in his more than 15 years in that role, which are remarkably similar regardless of how much money those clients have or how much money they don't have. Not long ago, we spoke to him about how he answers those questions and tackles those common fears that people have. We talk about heightened anxiety in times of financial uncertainty. That's pretty much all the time, isn't it? I'm not sure that there has ever been a time when there wasn't some measure of financial uncertainty in the markets.
That's very fair to say, yes. I think that there's always something going on in the news or something amplified by the news that can make people a little uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
I think the 2020s thus far have been particularly fraught, even as the market has rocketed higher.
And you point out in right at the very beginning of the piece that no matter how much money one has or doesn't have, that doesn't erase those feelings of anxiety, insecurity, or even embarrassment about their financial situation. More often than not, it actually amplifies those feelings.
To quote the famous saying, more money, more problems.
Yeah.
For a lot of wealthy people, they are very self-conscious about their money, the way they handle it. They know other wealthy people, and they always measure themselves against other mm-hmm. people because it's easy to do. It's a scoreboard in a way of how successful they are.
Yeah.
And regardless of how wealthy people are, oftentimes, you know, even very successful people in their careers, doctors, lawyers, CEOs, they have not ever had a lot of financial education. And so they can often have just as many spending problems as the rest of us.
I suppose that there is some comfort in knowing that it doesn't matter whether you make $20,000 or $200,000 a year. Many of us are in the same boat. So these are the things that you hear most often, again, from the piece. And you start with something to the effect of, I know I need a financial advisor, but I don't trust them. That's got to be a tough one as someone in your role to overcome.
It is. First, because it's very common. People sit down with a stranger and you don't really know what to expect. You know, you're guarded. You're uncomfortable potentially talking about some of your insecurities or your money questions. And that's hard to say to somebody that maybe you're meeting maybe for the first or second time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the trust is something that has to develop over time. And that's one of the biggest jobs of a financial advisor is certainly to be an expert in the financial details, but also to be a comforting role that can walk people through that journey from the starting point to being in a better financial position.
So I guess the lesson there for, you know, average folks is, I guess it's not an uncommon or, and it's a good thing to make sure that comfort level is there. That's something that you should have. That's okay.
That's something that you want to have. If you sit down with somebody and you just feel like, you know, I don't see eye to eye with this person, or I don't like the way that they, you know, work or the way that,
whatever it may be,
then that's not the person for you.
Yeah.
There are hundreds of thousands of financial advisors out there. You can find somebody who is right for you. You know, it may take a little bit of time and a little bit of work to do, but it's worth it to have that trusted person who you can work very closely with.
You get into a couple of the other questions that I think are really interesting. You hear quite often people say, I don't trust my children with money. So if we're thinking long-term financial planning, inheritance planning, that kind of thing, you know, what do you say to someone who just doesn't feel like they can trust their kids with an inheritance?
People sometimes don't trust their kids for good reason. Sometimes it's for no good reason, but sometimes there are reasons. And one of the roles of an advisor is to start to work through what are the solution opportunities for that. You know, in my role as an advisor, it wasn't my place to say, no, you can trust those people. Mm-hmm. It's my role to help them figure out, how do we solve this to achieve your goals? And sometimes that's as simple as coaching them through a conversation with their kids or mediating a conversation with their children, which is something I've done.
Yeah.
Other times it's figuring out, how do we set up financial accounts like a trust so that your money can be protected from the bad decisions that your children may make.
Yeah.
And that's something that happens when somebody needs guardianship for some reason, whether they have substance abuse problems or, you know, they are not competent to manage their own affairs for some reason. Then guardianship or trust accounts can be the way to do that. And that's perfectly normal. But for the average person, sometimes they just need a little bit of help bridging that gap and talking about kind of some of these financial themes that are important to them, to express that to their children.
And I thought it was interesting. One of the other questions is kind of the mirror image of that, the flip side of that. Somebody will say, I inherited a sum of money myself and I have no idea, you know, what to do with it. There's no plan. There's no financial plan. What do I do now?
Yes. And that kind of surprise is ideally what I want to, as an advisor, avoid for those children. Having a surprise inheritance puts you on your back foot.
Yeah.
And it leaves you with a financial responsibility that you may not be prepared for.
Right.
So that's the biggest reason that, from the parent's perspective, hey, let's talk to your kids about this inheritance. Let's prepare them for what this means. And let's put them on the same page as you. But it happens. And you get those surprises. And the story I talk about in the piece is one that unfortunately haunts me to this day, because it was a young guy that we weren't able to help, myself or any of my colleagues at our office. He rejected our help on numerous occasions. And over the course of a couple of years, he spent down his $500,000 retirement account that was given to him by his father. And that just absolutely, it haunts me because that amount of money could have put him in a position to never have to save for retirement over the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And he ruined it, and it hurts me.
And I know most of us, you know, would think of, oh, hey, I've just gotten this big windfall, but yeah, it can be really scary because, you know, thinking, oh, I don't want to blow it. I don't want to do something. I don't want to look back and regret when it's all gone, you know, thinking I could have, you know, done, you know, something better with all of this money. So
it can be very difficult because you feel a little bit paralyzed. It can be a big responsibility to feel like now, okay, you're carrying this forward from the relative that's given it to you. And, you know, that can kind of paralyze you. A lot of people sit on essentially cash for years, not knowing what to do with it, afraid to make the wrong decision. And, you know, that is often a mistake because it's often something that could have been put to better use.
Yeah. And then this one really caught my eye because I don't think there's anyone who hasn't experienced this to one degree or another. My partner and I don't see eye to eye about money. Maybe it's something specific. Maybe it's an overall philosophy. But how do you navigate when both sides of the couple don't have the same mindset when it comes to their finances?
I mean, who hasn't been in this position?
Yeah.
But it's a situation that is easily overcome with a little bit of honesty. You know, one of the things that I find, and I mentioned in the piece, is a good opening to talk about is to bridge the gap by talking not about yourself, not about your partner, but about your own parents. And to say, you know, hey, I want to share a few of the things that I learned growing up. Sometimes for better or for worse. Those aren't always good lessons.
Right.
But let's talk about why I am the way I am, why I feel about money a certain way, because they come from somewhere. And oftentimes that's our parents. And that is a way to sort of open it up in a little bit of a removed manner. And then you can get into more of the personal things like, you know, I want to set limits on spending in this area, or I feel uncomfortable with money around these type of things. Mm-hmm. I am conservative or aggressive with investments. Let's talk about you. And so you can sort of start to get into that conversation to figure out how do you lay the groundwork so that everybody's happy and has a mutual understanding of where those boundaries are.
Bottom line, what I took away from this piece is that these anxieties are not unique. And there is some comfort in understanding that you are not coming from a place that is unfamiliar to someone who truly can help you find the answers.
You know, money anxieties are something that really is common across everybody. You know, money is an emotional thing, and it's easy to feel emotional and personal about it. Getting a third party, like a professional financial advisor, to help you work through those can be one of the most beneficial things, because it's easy to fall into these traps. That's the best role an advisor can play, is being an unbiased third party to help coach you through figuring out how do you get from point A to point B, where you're going to be happier, healthier, and more financially stable.
Bankrate financial analyst and certified financial planner Stephen Cates breaking down some of the most common questions that he hears from clients that are remarkably similar, regardless of how much money someone has or doesn't have. We have a link to more great financial advice for folks who are facing these questions at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net. Well, hunger and isolation among our senior population are urgent and growing crises in America today. Meals on Wheels is a well-known program that provides both nutritious food and companionship to millions of older Americans through their partnerships with community agencies all over the country, including here in Northwest Ohio. And it goes by different names in different communities, but it's all kind of the same program. And this long-standing service is now at a bit of a crossroads, facing increased operational costs and stagnant funding. Josh Protas is Chief Advocacy and Policy Officer at Meals on Wheels America. And Josh, first of all, talk about the underlying need when it comes to these seniors in need. What do you see on the front lines?
Thanks for the interest in this important topic, Chris. Senior hunger and isolation are rising dramatically in communities across the country. We're seeing millions of older adults who are waiting for the nutritious meals and moments of connection they need and deserve because local Meals on Wheels providers don't have enough of the federal funding to meet growing demand. That demand continues to increase significantly as seniors become the fastest growing part of the American population. Mm-hmm. Everyday costs for things like food and fuel remain high, right, and vital government programs that support older Americans face cuts.
So what does that mean on the ground to local providers? And I mean, what's the effect of this?
Yeah, so the Older Americans Act Nutrition Program is the primary source of federal funding for the Meals on Wheels network. It's about a third of overall funding. It enables those local providers to deliver nutritious meals, conduct wellness checks, and offer those moments of connection that help seniors to remain healthy and independent. And unfortunately, when the program doesn't receive funding, and it's been chronically underfunded, many Meals on Wheels providers are stretched beyond capacity and forced to make impossible choices. Some local providers are creating or expanding wait lists or even shutting down entirely. One in three Meals on Wheels providers in our network currently maintains a wait list, with seniors in need waiting an average of 4 months for services. And so without a significant increase in federal funding, this problem will only become worse and more costly.
Now, as you mentioned, this is a chronic issue. It has long been underfunded. So this is not necessarily doesn't fall squarely on, you know, the current Congress, current lawmakers. But that being said, what action needs to be taken in order to reach the growing number, as you mentioned, it's the fastest rising segment of the population, this growing number of vulnerable older adults.
That's right. So stronger investment in Meals on Wheels services, it's not only the right thing to do to honor our seniors and make sure their needs are being met, but it's also a smart use of taxpayer dollars. Meals on Wheels is a proven and cost-effective solution that helps older adults remain safe and independent in their homes and reduces the costly use of hospitalizations and long-term care. We can provide Meals on Wheels services to a senior for an entire year for roughly the same cost as one day in a hospital or 12 days in a nursing home. But local providers need increased funding to reach more of the vulnerable seniors in need in their communities. So Congress has the opportunity right now to make a significant increase in funding for the Older Americans Act Nutrition Program and help to close that gap.
Is that on the table right now, or is this something that we have to encourage our lawmakers to start from scratch? I mean, is there a bill that is out there that would do that right now, or are we just starting the process?
So it's happening right now. The funding for Meals on Wheels services is part of the annual appropriations process.
I see.
Our funding is part of the labor HHS funding bill. The House has passed its version of the bill that has a very small increase in funding, but truthfully, that increase isn't even enough to keep up with inflation. The Senate now has the opportunity to do a significant boost to funding for the Older Americans Act Nutrition Program. And so this is a critical time for members of Congress to hear from constituents. To hear that seniors are a priority and that they should increase funding.
And that's kind of where I was going with this. What are you asking all of us to do to help fix the problem?
Would ask your listeners to join us and lend your voices, honor the seniors in your lives by taking action. And folks can learn more and take action by visiting MealsOnWheelsAmerica.org/voices for seniors.
Again, Josh Protas is Chief Advocacy and Policy Officer at Meals on Wheels America. Josh, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
A man is in custody after stealing a church bus in Colorado Springs. Stole a church bus. Deputies say they received a report of a stolen school bus-style vehicle in the Penrose area on July 7th. An off-duty lieutenant later spotted the bus in Canyon City, which is, what I guess, about an hour south of the Colorado Springs area. It was located in a Walmart parking lot where it had been abandoned. The bus was recovered and returned to its owner. Daniel Walton was arrested and is facing multiple charges, including second-degree theft of a motor vehicle. What are all the things you can steal? Why a church bus? I mean, why would you steal a church bus? Not exactly an inconspicuous vehicle. Maybe he was thinking that they would forgive him? I don't know that that was... I don't think that went according to plan. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning, a 67-year-old Florida man faces 5 felony charges after a sugar baby arrangement turned violent. David O'Brien met 21-year-old Mariah Turback on the Tinder dating app, offering $1,000 per visit plus dining and shopping. They got this sugar daddy thing going on there. After giving Ms. Turback $800 and taking her to his home, she became uncomfortable and called some friends to come pick her up. She wanted to leave. Mr. O'Brien then demanded his money back. And when she refused, he pursued her friend's vehicle in his Ford F-150, ramming it twice at a traffic circle until it became disabled. He then allegedly pointed a .22-caliber semi-automatic Ruger at a 22-year-old male passenger, threatening to kill him. Gee, I wonder why she felt uncomfortable in this situation. I can't imagine why that relationship didn't work out. Mr. O'Brien told police he felt scammed. He is being held on $90,000 bond, facing aggravated assault and four counts of aggravated battery. I can't believe that relationship didn't work out. I mean, boy, I tell you what, online dating, it gets you every time. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a jury in Maine has awarded 43-year-old Emily Mitchell and her husband $17 million in a landmark medical malpractice case. Back in March of 2023, Ms. Mitchell and her Northern Light Inland Hospital in Skowhegan, Maine, for a routine laparoscopic surgery to remove a benign cyst. The surgeon instead removed nearly her entire bladder, which was completely healthy. But he removed her. Now that's an oops. That is a big oops right there. Ms. Mitchell later returned to the hospital in severe pain, as you might imagine, unable to urinate because she had no bladder. Later that year, specialists in Boston rebuilt her bladder using intestinal tissue, but she still requires daily self-catheterization. A 9-person jury has unanimously awarded Ms. Mitchell $15.75 million, and her husband Joshua got $1.25 million for loss of companionship. It is the largest malpractice verdict in county history there in Maine. Wow. That is, I mean, normally I'm, you know, not a big fan of these huge medical malpractice suits. You know, I think sometimes they're overblown. But this one, I think, yeah, I could justify $17 million. Wow. Man, oh man. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
You're invited to the Night Jazz Concert to benefit Flag City Honor Flight Sunday, August 2nd from 4:30 till 7:30 at 50 North, located at 339 East Melrose in Findlay. The concert is free, but donations will be accepted. Come out for food, raffles, music, and fun Sunday, August 2nd from 4:30 to 7:30 at 50 North as Night Jazz performs to benefit Flag City Honor Flight. Doors open at 3:30. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. A new study finds that legal sports betting is having a significant effect on Americans' long-term savings, seriously cutting into our long-term savings. Researchers analyzed financial records from more than 183,000 U.S. households. And they found that after states legalized online sports betting, frequent bettors reduced their investment deposits by 56%, contributing 56% less into long-term savings. For every dollar placed into a betting app, investment deposits fell by roughly 20 cents. And frequent bettors, which is defined as those wagering more than half of all, defined as those who place a wager more than half of all months after their first bet. So they become regulars, frequent bettors. They deposited an average of $1,138 per quarter in their betting accounts, exceeding 5% of their income on average, while reducing deposits in their investment accounts by $221. So not a dollar for dollar effect necessarily, but one that can certainly have a substantial effect, especially when compounded over many years. Low savings households were hit the hardest. So you could argue those that are least able to afford it already are being hit even harder, showing significant drops in brokerage deposits alongside rising credit card debt. By the way, Americans now place over $160 billion in bets annually. Well, I know we are starting to talk about back to school now, and we were even talking about football season just a little bit ago earlier on the program, but not to worry, there is still more summertime fun to be had in the month of August with the Hancock Park District, and Michelle Rumschlag is with us once again, and we're not done yet. We got still plenty of summer left to go.
There is, and you know, and I think people forget, like, summer is technically till like mid-September, so.
Very good point.
Right, it's the, right, like, okay, I mean, once August hits, I get it, it's back to school mode, but yes, there's lots of activities still happening in August, and again, this is just a sampling, so you want to get a full listing, it's the website hancockparks.com
right.
to look at that.
Okay, so what are we highlighting, what's going on in the month of August?
Well, our monthly Discovery Center open house is taking place on Sunday, August 9th, and this is inside the Discovery Center there from 1 until 4. Again, it's free. All ages are welcome to come out. And it's going to be on backyard pollinators. And so I know native planting and having your yard being kind of open for wildlife and, you know, plants that you're planting are going to be beneficial to wildlife that's around. And this is another way to do that. So learning those butterflies, moths, bees, those different type of animals that are there, and how to bring them into your habitat or make a habitat in your backyard that's welcoming to them.
Yeah.
All this information will be there for that open house.
We need that because as if you follow this stuff, the pollinators have had a struggle past recent years. We've had issues with pollinators, so.
Right. And if you're planting native plants, I think people forget too, like sometimes maybe they're not as, I don't think so, but as showy as some of the non-native things. But then if it's native, it's used to our climate and our weather.
Right.
And, you know, it'll be an easier time of growing those things and keeping things alive in your yard if you have issues with that.
Yeah.
So why not plant something that's going to be easy to take care of? And again, it's beneficial to those animals that are already there probably in your backyard or might be inviting more if you want those type of animals.
It is a win-win all the way around. What else is going on in the month of August?
Well, another program, and this one, again, is maybe for those that might go, okay, I'm not so sure, but it's Arachnids in the Parks.
I'm sorry?
Monday, August, Arachnids.
Arachnids. Oh, okay.
Arachnids.
No. So we're talking arachnids. Spiders and things like that.
Exactly, yes. Okay. And so this is taking place on Monday, August 17th. And of course, it's those types of arachnids are spiders, your ticks, your daddy long legs, scorpions, but we don't have any scorpions in the parks, but a scorpion is an arachnid. So it's learning about those type of animals, their unique features and stuff that they've got. And so this is taking place at 6:30 inside of the Discovery Center. Again, it's for all ages. It's free, no registration necessary. So I know, again, it's not a nature topic that everyone is in love with, but again, it's good to know about those different animals that are out there.
It is important. I know in most cases, the spiders that we have are not anything to worry. In fact, are beneficial.
Yes.
Ticks, of course, are another story, but.
Yes, but they do serve their purpose. So other animals, I know people are like, well, why do we have it? Or why do we have like mosquitoes? And it's like, well, other things are eating them.
Yeah.
So for us, yes, they might be pests. But you're right with spiders. I mean, they're eating a lot of insects. And so sometimes you have them in your homes. You probably do. And so it's like, if there weren't those little things to eat in your house, they probably wouldn't be there. So again, learning about arachnids in the park on Monday, August 17th, 6:30. At the Discovery Center.
I saw one of those in my house this morning, as a matter of fact, now that you bring it up. Anything else to highlight in the month of August? What else is going on here?
Yep, happening later in the month is our American Girl Tea, and this is something that we've been doing for a handful of years.
Yeah.
And so we always highlight the historical dolls that they've come out with over the years. And this year it's going to be Julie, and she's from the year 1974. And so it's going to be learning about her life and all things 70 with the activities, the menu. Sounds like they're going to be having some carrot cake as part of the program. And so this is for kids ages 7 to 12 with an adult at 10 o'clock in the morning there at the Activity Barn at Litzenberg. And it's going to be $15 per child. Adults do not need to register.
Now, this is happening to me more and more often that things within my lifetime are being called historical. from 1974. This is within the scope of my lifetime here, and it is now historical. So,
well, it's when my life started. So it is over 50 years old. I mean, obviously, if we do the math, so it's something again. You know, it's a fun program that we got for kids.
That should be a lot of fun. Yeah.
And you don't need to have an American Girl doll to come. So sometimes people think that, you know, if you have one, great. If not, you can bring some other dolls. But again, a lot of fun and activities happening at 10 o'clock there on Saturday, August 22nd. But you do need to register by the Friday before at 1 o'clock.
Okay. And I would imagine that there is like a limited number or limited availability for that.
Yes, so, there is. And so we do have a few people signed up. We do need to hit a minimum. I mean, we've obviously have a few weeks for that to happen, but there is limited spacing for
that. May be one of those things, because I know all of those are always really popular. So sooner rather than later is probably a good idea on that one. And anything else to touch on or mention that's coming up that we want to feature and highlight here?
I know you always talking about our pioneer programs that we've got.
Yes.
So our McInnis Open House for August is on Sunday, August 16th. This is at 1 to 4. Again, you know, just need to show up. You know, all ages are welcome. And it's going to be on leather working is the topic. Okay. So stop by the workshop to see, you know, what kind of leather was being used and how they were crafted. Also look at how they would have been prepared some of the animal skin to make the leather. Of course, if it is the McInnis House, we'll have some refreshments inside there. So different stops throughout the area there around the McInnis House.
I'm curious. I mean, these days, I mean, we still have people that work with leather. It's a very specialized kind of thing. Back in that day, back in that era, would that have been something that, you know, more people would have done or been able to do it, had that skill to do that?
I'm not sure. I'm thinking it wouldn't be one. I mean, as you were hunting and had, or even, you know, with your farm animals, you would just know how to like tan the hides.
Yeah.
They would have used the furs for certain things, but then also would have known. So I think it's just something as they were, you know, you had deer, you had squirrels, rabbits that they would have, you know, or even some of the furs that they were.
So people would have had those tannery skills. Yeah.
Yes. As a process of that, I believe that probably would have been something they would have just done.
Yeah. I'm sure that there were, even in that day, people who specialized in, you know, doing it professionally. Kind of like today, we have people who work on our cars professionally, but we can tinker around with them. This would have been something that they probably would have done, especially, like you say, with small animals, probably on a more regular basis. Really kind of interesting stuff there. So that should be a fascinating program, as they all are. You mentioned that the full list of programs, activities, and all of that for the month of August are up on the webpage as well, right?
Yes. Yeah. So HancockParks.com. And then hopefully here within the next week, of course, our fall season is upon us. And so September programs should be on there within the next week, and then a few more weeks, the rest in October, November. but again, plenty of things to do here in the month of August. Again, HancockParks.com.
All right. Don't let summertime get away. There's still plenty of stuff to do in the great outdoors. Michelle Rumschlag with the Hancock Park District with us this morning. Michelle, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Once again, a reminder, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage. That is goodmornings.net. Drop by and see us at our little corner of the World Wide Web. Also, if you are a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well. And we thank you very much for that. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, planning continues to come together for Findlay's proposed microtransit system. We'll get an update on the progress of this effort and what needs to happen next to bring it to fruition. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.